Harris arrived on the bridge 2 hours before undock, having checked all the aired holds herself and as much of the machinery on which their lives depended as she could. Everywhere she'd looked, she'd found gleaming new casings, shiny metal, fresh inspection stickers, their time-bound inks still bright and colorful. It ought to mean everything was all right. And the unease she felt must be because this was a civilian ship, tricked out in plush and bright colors, rather than an honest warship. Her sulky pilot had the helm, his narrow brow furrowed. He was giving voice confirmation to the data already sent by computer. The Sweet Delight's registration, destination, planned route, beacon profiles, insurance coverage. Harris caught his eye and pointed to herself. She'd take over that tedious chore. The lists of required items came up on her command screen. Why an officer of an outbound vessel had to confirm by voice the closing of each account opened during a station visit, each time repeating the authorization number of the bank involved, she could not fathom. But so it was, and had been, time out of mind. Even on her own cruiser, someone had been required to formally state that each account was paid in full. It could take hours with a big ship. Here it was a minor chore.
Thank you, Sweet Delight. Final mail or deliveries?
Bates had told her that Lady Cecilia had a bag outgoing. The crew's mail had been stacked with it. She sent Sirkin to take it out to the registered station mail clerk. The furniture and decorations of the outer lobby had already been returned and stowed in one of the holds. When Sirkin returned, the yacht would be sealed from the station, and the final unlock sequence would begin. It seemed to take no time at all, compared to the bigger, more populous ships she was used to. Her own crew closed and locked the outer and inner hatches. The station's crew did the same on their side of the access tube. The Sweet Delight, on her own air now, smelled no different. An hour of final systems checks remained. The crew seemed to be careful, if slow, in working down the last checklists. They didn't skip anything she noticed, although she didn't know all the sequences for this vessel.
Tug's in position, Captain Serrano.
The pilot had been positioning the yacht's bustle to protect it from the tug's grapples. Yachts were too small to fit the standard grapple arrangements. They carried special outriggers that gave the tugs a good grip and kept the main hull undamaged. Harris looked at the onboard chronometer. 2 minutes to their slot. She switched one channel of her comm to the tug's frequency.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
There. She'd said it, officially, to another vessel, and the stars did not fall.
Station Tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
Despite the bustle, she was sure she felt the yacht flinch as the tug caught hold. A perfect match of relative motion was rare, even now. Her status lights switched through red, orange, and yellow to green.
All fast on your signal.
On the other channel of her comm, the on-watch station master waited for her signal.
Captain Serrano of Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
The board spread emerald before her.
All clear aboard.
The coordinated computers broke the yacht's connection with the station. The tug dragged the yacht, still inert, her drives passive, safely away from the station and its crowded traffic lanes. Harris used this time to check the accuracy of the yacht's external sensors against station and tug reports of other traffic. Everything seemed to work as it should. She felt very odd, being towed without even the in-system drive powered up, but civilian vessels routinely launched cold, and the tug companies preferred it that way. According to them, some idiot was likely to put his finger on the wrong button if he had power. They reached their assigned burn sector several hours later.
Confirm safe sector Blue Tango 34, permission to release.
Permission to release grapples.
Harris nodded to the pilot and Gavin. The tug retracted its grapples and boosted slowly away.
Mr. Gavin, in system drive.
The pilot was retracting the bustle and checking with visuals that the lockdown mechanism secured properly.
In system drive.
The yacht's sublight drive lit its own set of boards.
Normal power up.
Harris could see that. She let out the breath she'd been holding. They'd done a power up as part of the systems check, but that didn't mean it would power up again as smoothly.
Engage.
The artificial gravity seemed to shiver as the yacht's drive began a determined shove, much stronger than the tug's. Then it adjusted, and the yacht might have been sitting locked on planet somewhere.
Mr. Plissen, she's yours.
The pilot would have the helm until they made the first jump, and during jump sequences thereafter.
Sweet Delight, confirmed power up, confirmed engagement, confirmed on course.
Yo, sweetie, come and see us again sometime. Tug 34 out.
Harris seethed at the pilot's amiable response, then realized that Sweetie was probably this yacht's nickname, not an insult. After all, even service tug captains called the Yorktown Yorkie.
So here I go. Off to some place I've never been so my employer can chase foxes over the ground on horseback and I can spend a month at Hospitality Bay making friends with other captains in the guild.
Somehow, the thought did not appeal. Harris had heard about cruise captains. Unlike the captains of scheduled passenger ships, they were expected to hobnob with guests, flattering and charming them. She would not cooperate if that's what Lady Cecilia had in mind. She would make it clear that she was a captain, not an entertainer. She would eat decent spacefaring meals in her own quarters, since the ship offered no separate wardroom for ship's officers. Cecilia had heard about space fleet captains from her sisters. Cold, mechanical, brutal, insensitive, which meant they had not worshipped at the shrine of her sister Berenice's beauty, she thought. She enjoyed her meals too much to invite a boor to share them. That first evening of the voyage proper, Harris ate in her cabin, working her way through a stack of maintenance and fitness logs. The crew cook provided a surprisingly tasty meal. She had been prepared for bland, reconstituted food, but the crisp greens of her salad had never seen a freeze-dry unit, she was sure. She missed having a proper wardroom for the officers' mess, but the officers on Sweet Delight, such as they were not likely to become rewarding dinner companions. At least Lady Cecilia had not stinted on fresh food or on the quality of maintenance. Harris nodded at the screen full of data. Not one back-alley refitter in the lot. If the lady was bent on hiring incompetence, as Harris had begun to suspect, she did so from some other motive than mere economy. The bills would have paid for refitting a larger and more dangerous ship than the yacht, but Harris supposed part of it went into cosmetics, like the decor, which reminded her she must explain to Lady Cecilia the need for tearing out that plush covering the umbilicals. She ignored the gooey dessert for another stalk of mint-flavored celery, slid her tray into the return bin, and called up data from the next refitting. So far, she refused to let herself contemplate all the future days, nothing had gone very wrong. This life might be bearable after all. Ronnie lay sprawled in the massage lounger, his admittedly handsome body still dripping sweat from his workout on the gym equipment. Cecilia eyed him sourly. She wanted a massage herself, but not on the clammy cushions he would leave behind. When she'd chosen the luxurious Zaur leather upholstery, she'd assumed she'd never have to share it. The saleswoman had mentioned the potential problem, and she had shrugged it off. Now she felt aggrieved, as if it were anyone's fault but hers.
"Yes, I do. And be prompt. Good food doesn't improve by sitting."
"Thank you, Lady Cecilia."
Rafaela appeared to be George's companion, slight and dark, though not as dark as Captain Serrano.
"These young men would never dress if you didn't make them, and we can't if they don't."
"Why not?"
Cecilia was in no mood to honor custom. She watched the girls share a glance, then Rafaela tipped her head to one side.
"I feel silly, that's all. My red dress and the boys in skimps."
"If you're going to feel silly just because some lummox doesn't live up to your expectations, you'll have a miserable life. Wear what you want and ignore them."
Another shared glance.
"That's what you do. And that's why you never married and live by yourself in a miserable little ship."
Cecilia stared him down.
"That's why I have the money and position I do, independent of any alliance, to do what I want. And that's why I was available to help you when you got yourself into this mess. Or perhaps you don't know that the first suggestion given your father was that you be packed off on an ore hauler to Verstine."
"They wouldn't have."
"They didn't, but largely because I was available and could be talked into it. If your mother... well, never mind. But my point is that if I had been a conventional member of this family and married to some appropriate spouse, I would hardly have been free to take you on. You persist in regarding this as some kind of lark, but I assure you that most men, grown men, such as your father and his friends, consider your breach of the lady's confidence a disgrace, even apart from its political implications. Ronnie reddened. Now, go make yourself fit for civilized company at dinner, all of you. That includes you young women. I do not consider the sort of clothes you wear to parties with your own set adequate. Cecilia actually had very little idea what kind of clothes they wore to parties with their own set, but had a clear memory of herself at 19 to 23. When they had left, Cecilia felt the cushions of the massage lounger and shuddered, entirely too clammy. She aimed a blow dryer at it and decided on a short swim. The pool's privacy screen, a liquid crystal switchblade only from within, closed her into a frosted dome, onto which she projected a visual of overhanging forest. The water enfolded her. She let her body and mind merge with water and music, swimming languidly, just enough to counter the gentle current.
Time to dress, m'lady.
Bad words, bad words, bad words! Cecilia had gotten away with that in childhood, even before she learned any. Her stomach burned. If it hadn't been for Ronnie and his gang, she could have had dinner held until she was ready. And she'd have been ready, because she wouldn't have been interrupted. And her massage lounger wouldn't have been sweaty. She hauled herself out of the pool, hit the privacy control without thinking, and only then realized that with guests aboard, she would have to be more careful. Luckily, they were all off dressing. None of them had straggled back to ask a stupid question. Not that they didn't swim bare, but she had no desire to have them compare her body to their young ones. She walked into the warmed toweling robe that Myrtis held, and stood still while Myrtis rubbed her hair almost dry. Then she stepped into the warm fleece slippers, took another warmed towel, and headed for her own suite, still rubbing at her damp hair. It dried faster these days, being thinner. She hated the blow dryers and would rather go to dinner a bit damp than use one. In her cabin, Myrtis had laid out her favorite dinner dress, a rich golden brown she-silk accented with ivory lace. Cecilia let herself be dried, oiled, powdered, and helped into the clothes without thinking about it. Myrtis, unlike Oblice, her first maid, had never seen her young body. She treated Cecilia with professional correctness and the mild affection of someone who has worked for the same employer 15 years and hopes to retire in the same position. Cecilia sat, allowed Myrtis to fluff her short hair, with its odd spatchings of red and gray, and fastened on the elaborate necklace of amber and enameled copper that made the lace look even more delicate. Those girls might be 50 years younger, but they would know a Maris Limited design when they saw it, and it would have its effect. They would not know it had been designed for her by the original Maris or why, but that didn't matter. The plump roast fowls sent up a fragrance that made Cecilia's stomach subside from its tension. She glanced around the table and nodded to Bates. Service proceeded, a blend of human and robotic. A human handed her breast slices of roast and the gravy boat, but crumbs vanished without the need of a crumb brush.
Do you eat like this all the time, Lady Cecilia?
Sober, cured of her hangover, Bubbles was reasonably pretty, Cecilia thought, except that her gown looked as if it would burst with her next mouthful. She was not so plump. The gown was that tight. She wore a warm, bright green. It showed off her white skin and blonde curls, although it clashed with the dark Raffaella's red dress. The other girl, Sarah, wore a blue that would have been plain had it not been silk brocade, a design of fishes, Dalbinian work.
Yes, why not? Cook is a genius, and I can afford it, so...
Tell us about your new captain. Why you choose a space fleet officer?
Why was she available?
Less handsome than Ronnie, which Cecilia might have approved, the odious George had the sort of gloss she distrusted, as if he'd been coated with varnish.
I wasn't satisfied with my former captain's performance.
As if they had a right to ask. Cecilia knew she mellowed with good food. It was one reason she made sure to have it. She wasn't going to admit that if Captain Olin had held to her schedule, she'd have been safely distant and unavailable when Ronnie was exiled. Why waste good ammunition? I wanted more efficiency, better leadership. Before, they were always coming to me complaining about this and that, or getting crossways with staff. I thought an officer from the regular space service would know how to maintain discipline and follow my orders.
The regs are crazy for discipline. Remember when Courier transferred, Ronnie? He didn't last 6 weeks. It was all nonsense. It's not as if all that spit and polish and saluting accomplishes anything.
Buttons, Bunny's middle son, looked surprisingly like his father as he ran a thumb down the side of his nose. Gesture, decided Cecilia, and not features. He had his mother's narrow, beaky nose and her caramel-colored hair.
Oh, I don't know. You can't get along with no discipline.
And his mother's penchant for taking the other side of any argument, Cecilia told herself. In the girl, it had been fun to watch. But as Bunny's wife, she had caused any number of social ruptures by choosing exactly the wrong moment to point out that not everyone agreed. The incident of the fish knives still rankled in Cecilia's memory. She wondered which parent Bubbles took after.
Now, we're not talking about no discipline. We're talking about the ridiculous iron-fisted excuse for discipline in the regs. I don't mind fitness tests and qualifying exams. Even with modern techniques, the best family can throw an occasional brainless wonder. But I really do not see any reason for archaic forms of military courtesy that have no relevance to modern warfare.
Button shrugged without looking up from his food. He had the blissful expression most of Cecilia's guests wore when they first encountered the products of Cook's genius. George looked around for another source of conversation and found the others all engaged in their meal. With the faintest echo of Buttons's shrug, he too began to eat.